Throughout history, there have been some men and women identified for their eminent doctrine and remarkable holiness of life, whom the Church has declared doctors. They fulfill what we hear in Psalm 15. Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy mountain? Whoever walks without blame, doing what is right, speaking truth from the heart, who does not slander with his tongue, does no harm to a friend, never defames a neighbor, who disdains the wicked, but honors those who fear the Lord, who keeps an oath despite the cost, lends no money at interest, accepts no bribe against the innocent. Whoever acts like this shall never be shaken. Let us now place ourselves before the doctors of the Church to learn from their lives and their teaching in this program, Speaking Truth from the Heart. My name is Father Rick Martinetti. I'm a Franciscan priest, and today I will be reading to you chapter 13 of The Major Life of St. Francis, as written by St. Bonaventure. Chapter 13 is dedicated entirely to the sacred stigmata of Francis, to the gift he was given from on high, the gift of the five wounds of Christ. In Francis's side, in his feet, and in his hands, he received this gift from an angel that he might be more conformed to Jesus. This gift came as an answer to a lifetime of prayer. Francis prayed. He wanted to know Jesus so intimately. He even wanted to know the pains that our Lord felt on the cross. So much in love with Jesus was this man, Francis. And so he was given this gift, the first person we know of to receive this gift in history. And Bonaventure records it and presents it as a really pivotal piece of the puzzle of who Francis was, a man so in love with Christ that he even wanted to suffer with the Lord on the cross. Let's pick up the story here, chapter 13. It was a custom for the angelic man, Francis, never to rest from the good. Rather, like the heavenly spirits on Jacob's ladder, he either ascended into God or descended to help his neighbor. For he had so prudently learned to divide the time given to him for merit that he spent some of it working for his neighbor's benefit and dedicated the rest to the peace of contemplation. Therefore, when he spent himself according to the demand of times and places to gain the salvation of another, leaving the restlessness of the crowds, he would seek the secrets of solitude and head off to places of quiet where he could be free to simply be the Lord's. He would shake off the dust that might have clung to him and spend time away from the crowds in the heart of the Lord. And so it was 2 years before he returned his spirit to heaven. After a variety of many labors, he was led by divine providence to a high place called Mount Laverna. When, according to his usual custom, he had begun to fast there for 40 days, in honor of St. Michael the Archangel, he experienced more abundantly than usual an overflow of the sweetness of heavenly contemplation and was on fire with an ever-intense flame of heavenly desire. He began to be aware more fully of the gifts of heaven. He was carried into the heights of heaven, not as a curious searcher of some supreme majesty, but as a faithful and prudent servant, exploring God's heart and God's good pleasure, to which, with the greatest ardor, he desired to conform himself in every way. Through a divine sign from heaven, he had learned that in opening the book of the gospel, Christ would reveal to him what God considered most acceptable in him and from him. After completing his prayer with much devotion, he took the book of the sacred gospels from the altar and had his companion, a holy man dedicated to God, opened it three times in the name of the Holy Trinity. All three times, when the book was opened, the Lord's passion met his eyes. The man filled with God understood that just as he had imitated Christ in the actions of his life, so he should be conformed to him in the affliction and sorrow of his passion before he would pass out of this world. And although Francis's body was already weakened by the great austerity of his life and his continual carrying of the Lord's cross, he was in no way frightened, but was inspired even more vigorously to endure martyrdom. The unconquerable enkindling of love in him for the good Jesus had grown into lamps and flames of fire that many waters could not quench, so powerful a love. With the seraphic ardor of desires, therefore, he was being borne aloft into God. And by compassionate sweetness, he was being transformed into him who chose to be crucified out of the excess of his love. On a certain morning, about the feast of the Exaltation of the Cross, while Francis was praying on a mountainside, he saw a seraph, having six wings, fiery as well as brilliant, descend from the grandeur of heaven. And when, in swift flight, it had arrived at a spot in the air near the man of God, there appeared between the wings the likeness of a man crucified, with his hands and feet extended in the form of a cross and fastened to a cross. Two of the seraph's wings were raised above his head, two were extended for flight, and two covered the rest of his body. Seeing this, Francis was overwhelmed, and his heart was flooded with a mixture of joy and sorrow. He rejoiced at the gracious way Christ looked upon him under the appearance of the seraph, but the fact that he was fastened to a cross pierced his soul with a sword of compassionate sorrow. Francis marveled exceedingly at the sight of so unfathomable a vision, knowing that the weakness of Christ's passion was in no way compatible with the immortality of the seraphic spirit. Eventually, he understood from this, through the Lord revealing it, that divine providence had shown him a vision of this sort so that the friend of Christ might learn in advance that he was to be totally transformed into the likeness of Christ crucified, not by a martyrdom of the flesh, but by the enkindling of his soul. As the vision was disappearing, it left in his heart a marvelous fire and imprinted in his flesh a likeness of signs no less marvelous. For immediately the marks of the nails began to appear in his hands and feet, just as he had seen a little before in the figure of the man crucified. His hands and feet seemed to be pierced through the center by nails, with the heads of the nails appearing on the inner side of the hands and the upper side of the feet and their points on the opposite sides. The heads of the nails of his hands and his feet were round and black. Their points were oblong and bent as if driven back with a hammer, and they emerged from the flesh and stuck out beyond it. Also his right side, as if pierced with a lance, was marked with a red wound from which his sacred blood often flowed, moistening his tunic and underwear. As Christ's servant realized that he could not conceal from his intimate companions the stigmata that had been so visibly imprinted on his flesh, he feared to make public the Lord's sacrament and was thrown into an agony of doubt whether to tell what he had seen or be silent about it. And so he called some of the brothers and, speaking in general terms, presented his doubt to them and sought their advice. One of the brothers, Illuminato by name and by grace, understanding that Francis had seen something marvelous that made him seem completely dazed, said to the holy man, "Brother, you should realize that at times divine gifts and signs and sacraments are revealed to you not for yourself alone, but for others. You have every reason to fear that if you hide what you have received for the profit of many, you may be blamed for burying your talent." Although the holy man used to say on other occasions, "My secret is for myself," he was moved by Illuminato's words. And so with much fear, he recounted the vision of the seraph in detail, adding that the one who had appeared to him had told him some things which he would never disclose to any person as long as he lived. We should believe, then, that those utterances of that sacred seraph marvelously appeared to him on the cross were so secret that some are not permitted to speak of them. Let me stop at this point just to make a few comments on what I've just read. This was unheard of in the history of the church, but Francis was so in love with the Lord that he wanted to know the Lord's passion. And so as Bonaventure portrays it, it almost seems that nails came out of the flesh of Francis's body, his hands and his feet. They turned dark and black as if nails were in them. And Francis wants to hide this sacrament, as Bonaventure calls it. And when he uses the word sacrament, it's a small s. He's not talking about the seven sacraments, but a sacramentum is a sign, just with a small s. And this was a sign that God had chosen Francis and made him his beloved. And Francis always struggled his whole life how much to share with other people. He had been given so many mystical gifts and had such a deep prayer life that he felt a lot of it was just between him and God. And yet his brother Illuminato reminds him that sometimes the whole church benefits from a gift to one of its members. And we know that it's 800 years later and we are benefiting from the gift of the stigmata given to Francis. So his brothers persevere and he tells the story of the seraph. The seraph is the highest of the nine choirs of angels, and it seems the Lord sent a seraph that was in the form of Christ crucified. A seraph with the six wings that would be normal, but on a cross, as if Jesus was one with the seraph on the cross. And this is what appeared to Francis. The seraph is known as the angel of love, and the highest choir of angels in heaven. And in fact, Bonaventure, who's telling the story, would go on to be nicknamed by the church the seraphic doctor, the doctor of the church who tells us of the great love of God made manifest in the seraph. So this beautiful tale continues as we are invited to draw inspiration from Francis, who received a gift like this so open-heartedly from the Lord. Let's continue now. After true love of Christ transformed the lover into his image, when the 40 days of the fast were over, that he spent in solitude as he had desired, and the feast of St. Michael the Archangel had also arrived, the angelic man Francis came down from the mountain bearing with him the likeness of the crucified one, depicted not on tablets of stone like Moses, or on panels of wood carved by hand, but engraved on parts of his flesh by the finger of the living God. And because it is good to keep hidden the sacrament of the King, the man aware of the royal secret would then hide from others who sought to see his signs. Since it is for God to reveal what he does for his own great glory, the Lord himself, who had secretly imprinted those marks, openly revealed some miracles through them, so that the hidden and marvelous power of the stigmata would display a brilliance of signs and lead others back to God. One time, in the province of Rieti, a very serious plague broke out, and so cruelly that the lives of many and cattle and sheep were also forfeited. A certain God-fearing man was told in a vision at night to hurry to the hermitage of the brothers and get the water in which God's servant Francis, who was staying there at the time, had washed his hands and feet, and to sprinkle the water on all of the animals. He got up in the morning, came to the place, secretly got the water from the companions of the holy man, and sprinkled it on the sheep and cattle. Marvelous to say, the moment the water touched the animals, which were weak and lying on the ground, they immediately recovered their former vigor, stood up, and as if they had nothing wrong with them, hurried off to pasture. Thus, through the miraculous power of that water which had touched the sacred wounds in Francis's body, the plague ceased. Human beings and cattle alike were healed, and deadly disease fled from the flocks. About the time the holy man stayed on Mount Laverna, clouds would form over the mountain, and violent hailstorms would devastate the crops. But after that blessed apparition, the hail stopped, to the amazement of the inhabitants, so that the unusually serene face of the sky proclaimed the excellence of that heavenly vision and the power of the stigmata imprinted there. In wintertime, because of his physical weakness and the rough roads, Francis was once riding on a donkey belonging to a poor man. It happened that he spent the night at the base of an overhanging cliff to try to avoid the inconveniences of a snowfall and the darkness of night that prevented him from reaching his place of lodging. When, however, the saint heard his helper tossing and turning, grumbling and groaning, since as he had only thin clothing, the biting cold would not let him sleep, burning with the fire of the divine love, Francis stretched out his hand and touched his companion. A marvelous thing happened. At the touch of his sacred hand, which bore the burning coal of the seraph, the cold fled altogether, and the man felt great heat within and without, as if he had been hit by a fiery blast from the vent of a furnace. Comforted in mind and body, he slept until morning more soundly among the rocks and snow than he ever had in his own bed, as he later used to attest. Thus it is obvious to certain witnesses that those sacred marks were imprinted by the power of him who, through a seraphic activity, purifies, illumines, and inflames. Outwardly, by purifying from pestilence with a marvelous effect, they brought health, serene skies, and warmth to bodies. As after his death, this was demonstrated by even more evident miracles, as we will later record, in the proper place. So as we can see, the gift of the stigmata is a gift not just to Francis, but to the world around him and the world after him. God uses this miracle to work wonders even in the lifetime of St. Francis, and Francis still has that dilemma of whether or not to hide this miracle from other people and just keep it as something personal between him and the Lord. But it seems that the Lord wanted to use this to show people that Francis was holy, to show them that he had chosen the right path. This is not so much about some miracle from heaven as about the choices that Francis made every day to embrace poverty, to reach out and to serve those covered with the sores of leprosy, to be a man of simplicity who strove to follow all the gospel commands. By imprinting the sacred stigmata on his body, the Lord Jesus is saying, yes, Francis chose the right path. Look to him and learn how to live. Look to him, learn how to serve and how to embrace a life of prayer and simplicity. The stigmata was just kind of the icing on the cake that showed that Francis had chosen the gospel and had made it his own, and that he's a man we can learn from. So Bonaventure continues the story. Although Francis tried his best to hide the treasure found in the field, he could not prevent at least some from seeing the stigmata in his hands and feet, although he always kept his hands covered and from that time on wore shoes. A number of the brothers saw them while he was still alive. Although they were men of outstanding holiness and so completely trustworthy, nevertheless, to remove all doubt, they confirmed under oath touching the most sacred stigmata. And so, of the cardinals who saw them because of their close friendship with the holy man of God, the cardinals inserted praises of the sacred stigmata in the hymns, antiphons, and sequences which they composed in his honor. And thus, by their words, the writings gave testimony to the truth. Even the Holy Father, the Supreme Pontiff Lord Alexander, in a sermon preached to the people at which many of the brothers and I myself were present, affirmed that he had seen the sacred stigmata with his own eyes while the saint was still alive. More than 50 brothers, along with the Virgin Saint Clare, who was most devoted to God, and her sisters, as well as innumerable laymen, saw them after his death. Many of these individuals kissed the stigmata out of devotion and touched them with their own hands to strengthen their testimony. But the wound in his side, he so cautiously concealed, that as long as he was alive, no one could see it, except by stealth. One brother, who used to zealously take care of him, induced him with the pious care to take off his tunic one day and shake it out. Watching closely, he saw the wound, and he even quickly touched it with three of his fingers, determining the size of the wound by both sight and touch. The brother who was his vicar at that time also managed to see it. A brother who was a companion of his, a man of marvelous simplicity, when he was one day rubbing his shoulders that were weak from illness, put his hand under Francis's hood and accidentally touched the sacred wound, causing him great pain. As a result, from that time on, Francis always wore underclothes made so that they would reach his wound and cover his side. Also, the brothers who washed these or shook out his tunic from time to time, since they were found stained with blood, were convinced without any doubt from this evident sign of the existence of the sacred wound, which after his death, they along with many others contemplated and venerated. Come now, most vigorous knight of Christ, bear the arms of your invincible leader. Visibly shielded with these, you will overcome all adversaries. Carry the standard of the Most High King, by whose gaze all combatants of the divine army are aroused to courage. Carry the seal of Christ, the supreme pontiff, by which your words and deeds will be rightly accepted by all as authentic and beyond reproach. And so what Bonaventure has just done here is listed some of the witnesses to the sacred stigmata. As much as Francis tried to hide it, people caught wind of it. People knew what had happened to this holy man of God. And he lists a number of brothers and sisters that experienced the stigmata. And now Bonaventure is going to conclude chapter 13 just by addressing Francis in this little kind of a poem, kind of a prayer. He's going to mention some of his other brothers like Pacifico and Sylvester, who also had profound experiences that let them know the man of God, Francis, was holy. And he's just going to leave us with this prayer that we can reflect on and try to maybe learn from Francis what it means to truly give ourselves to Jesus Christ and to fall madly in love with him. And so we conclude with these words. For now, because of the stigmata of the Lord Jesus, which you, Francis, carry in your body, let no one trouble you. Rather, every servant of Christ must show you with all sincerity great devotion. Now, through these most certain signs, corroborated not by the sufficient testimony of only two or three witnesses, but by a testimony of a whole multitude, God's testimony about you and through you has been made overwhelmingly credible, removing completely from unbelievers the veil of excuse, while they confirm believers in faith, raise us aloft with confident hope, and set us ablaze with the fire of charity. Now, the first vision you saw is truly fulfilled. That is, that you should be a future leader in the militia of Christ and bear heavenly arms emblazoned with the sign of the cross. Now, the vision that you saw at the outset of your conversion must undoubtedly be believed as true, that is, of the crucified piercing your soul with a sword of compassionate love. But also the sound of the voice from the cross, as if proceeding from the throne of the lofty Christ, and the secret mercy seat, as you confirmed with your own sacred utterance. Now, in the unfolding of your conversion, the cross Brother Sylvester saw marvelously coming from your mouth, and the swords the holy Pacifico saw piercing your body in the form of a cross, and the figure of you lifted up in the air in the form of a cross by the angelic Monaldo, that which he saw while St. Anthony was preaching about the inscription on the cross. These must be believed and affirmed not as imaginary, but as celestial revelation. Now, finally, near the end, you were shown at the same time the sublime similarity of the seraph and the humble likeness of the crucified, inwardly inflaming you and outwardly signing you as the other angel ascending from the rising of the sun, that you might have in you the sign of the living God. This both gives strength of faith to the previous ones and receives from them the testimony of truth. For behold, Francis, you have arrived with 7 apparitions of the cross of Christ, wondrously apparent and visible in you or about you, following an order of time like 6 steps leading to the 7th, where you finally find rest. For the cross of Christ, both offered to and taken on by you at the beginning of your conversion and carried continuously from that moment throughout the course of your most proven life and given example to others, shows with such clarity of certitude that you have finally reached the summit of gospel perfection. And no truly devout person can reject this proof of Christian wisdom plowed in the dust of your very flesh. No truly believing person can attack it. No truly humble person can belittle it, since it is truly divinely expressed and worthy of complete acceptance. My name is Father Rick Martinetti, a Franciscan priest with the Order of Friars Minor, and I want to thank you for taking this time to listen with me and to reflect on the writings of Saint Bonaventure. And let's continue to ask his prayer and his intercession that what we hear may truly have an effect in our lives, that it may sink deeply into our hearts and lead us to a life of greater love for our Lord Jesus Christ. And may God give you peace.